Chapter 9. The Imperial ship was darker than he would have thought. It was cold, too, the bitter kind that got into a man's skin. The glacial vastness of its inner spaces swirled with a dark ash that grated on the airways like frozen sand. It reminded Decker of his secondment to the consulate on Undecimus. Shivering under artificial lights, breathing artificial air, waking each work cycle to the darkened neglect of an industrial winter. It took all his energy not to shiver now, as he descended the hard metal ramp from the numbing power of the Odin spear. Shivering only worsened the cold, and more than that, he did not want to look weak. It was only rarely desirable to look weak when one entered into negotiations, doubly so when one's position was weak. And if he had drawn anything from his interrogation of Moses Trurak and from his present company, then it was that the Imperials were profoundly intolerant of weakness. A sonorous metallic boom reverberated through the deck, up the bulkheads, ruffled the flocking banners and ran up Decker's spine, as 5,000 armoured gods made a sharp right turn. One impenetrable block parted along a previously unnoticed central plane to form a corridor, extending like a chasm from the foot of the ramp to the immense engraved arches at the far, far end of the hangar. All thoughts of shivering fled, as he focused instead on resisting the need to gawp. The High Lords of Gardenal valued nothing so highly as a military procession. Millions of men in precision blocks, standards fluttering, then the armoured divisions, huge tanks bedecked with inspirational messages, super-heavy tripod walkers so large that their footfalls had stirred the heart and brought power outages along the path of the procession. And then more men, millions more. And the pride of the Gardenal, the artillery, the atomic ballistari that had so devastated the first Imperial invaders, hauled by monstrous trucks to the cheers of a dutiful and ever-pliant populace. So vast were they that they could run for days. In fact, an understanding of the logistics involved in conducting a planet-circling procession made the display more impressive rather than less. When one considered that over the duration of the parade, those millions upon millions of marching men would have been replaced by millions upon millions more, several times over. As of that second, it had lost all power to impress, crushed under the weight of 5,000 armoured gods.
"Close your mouth, Consul. Do not betray your years by drooling now."
Decker stiffened as High Lord Strakhan tramped down from the gunship. The High Lord was no less formidable than the Imperials. Indeed, in his reliquary warsuit, he was, by any objective measure, greater. But compared to their explicit perfection, the exaggerated hydraulics and ossified armour of his tripedal armature seemed crude. Every edge was hard. Every quantum of energy produced sent a shudder through his scaffold. Every adornment was functional. The moribund thing inside was smaller. He saw that now. The Imperial Lord Commander Duquesne had at first insisted that Strakhan be removed from his suit before being permitted aboard his gunship, until Decker had patiently explained why that was impossible. They had settled instead for impounding his pacifier protection detail on the surface, confiscating his banners, draining his gas canisters, and removing his ammunition hoppers. Or most of them. Their understanding of Beamer technology was surprisingly limited. Tobris Venn trailed shortly behind. His arm was crudely splinted and suspended in a sling. He had made no complaint. Decker could not say that shooting his aide had not brought some pleasure, but it had been a necessity. Without a convincing wound, it would have been difficult to get close enough to the Imperial Medicaid station to use his powers. The young clerk turned a little towards High Lord Strakhan and gazed up, eyes almost closed, as if drawing actual energy from the closeness of his august master, oblivious to the 20 iron hands that had debarked the gunship immediately after them. They came fully armed and armoured, unspeaking, as if yet to be informed that the war had been left on Gardenal Prime, their weapons a shade below instant kill shots. The art of diplomacy was alive and well in the Imperium of Man.
I remind you that this was your idea.
Strachan's voice resonated harshly from augmitters situated behind a slatted face mask. His decayed human face was high up, shadowed from Decker's view by the steel bars of his mask, an eyeless husk speckled with silver-grey. Like Decker, he was old, unimaginably old, and though once counted amongst the highest of lords, even the dead could not endure forever. Today he was deemed expendable. The parallels aligned too closely for comfort.
If this fails...
The threat hung limply between them. Decker's reward for success was a rescheduled appointment with the bio-reclamation centres on Primus. The High Lord would forgive him for not trembling at the personal consequences of failure.
The Imperialis display a segregated command structure, much like our own orders and ministries.
Decker nodded subtly to the varied banners and devices as he whispered into Strachan's thoracic pickups. The left-hand block of warriors and three-quarters of those on the right were hulking brutes in black and silver and naked steel. The lenses of their eyes shone red. Their helms were grilled like a muzzle on a savage dog. Steam coiled about the seals of their armour. The remainder, though fewer and less overtly threatening, were no less imperious for either trait. Proud warriors encased in purple warplate with golden highlights and decorative silks. Champions in cobalt blue. Inscrutable giants in red and white. The power of their armoured frames rendered, if not into insignificance, then into second place by the vibrancy of their minds.
And yet, perversely, the Primarch holds absolute authority. You have seen what the Imperium is capable of, my lord. You know that this is our only chance.
We will succeed,
said Ven, with the supreme confidence of a child. Strachan grumbled,
We had better.
A smaller troop of Imperials marched towards them, down the corridor made by the two blocks of warriors. A group of three detached from the rest, a phalanx of brooding hulks in stupendously heavy armour, and strode to the ramp.
I am Gabriel Santar.
The warrior was pitted like an asteroid, his gaze as intense as an extinction-level event, his armour still carrying the marks of recent fighting. He had his helm clutched underarm, the ceramic straining softly against the pressure of a cold augmetic hand.
First captain of the Iron Hands Legion.
He gave the slighter figure to his left a sideways glance.
And equerry to Ferris Manus. As a gesture of good faith, I have been recalled from the offensive to command your escort while you are aboard the Fist of Iron.
He looked up at Strachan, lips pursed. His armour was bulkier than that of his companions, and he stood almost level with the High Lord's pectoral shield coils.
And I will be the personal guarantor of his security.
The warrior whom Santar had briefly indicated took his cue to step forward. His features were quietly compelling, his armour replete with the forms of winged beasts and strange quadrupeds, spiralling calligraphy and giltwork like nothing that had ever before been seen on the 11 worlds. He nodded to Decker, presented his hand to Strachan, then laughed as he noted the immense claws and weapons assemblies that terminated the High Lord's three upper limbs.
Forgive me.
Santar muttered something under his breath.
Arcaduana, said the warrior with an apologetic bow, second captain of the Emperor's Children Legion.
We have met.
Decker returned the bow.
Formalities,
Arcaduana smiled, stepping back. All eyes turned to the third figure. Decker knew him well from the consular transcripts, all that had emerged intact from those disastrous early negotiations with the Imperium. He deepened his bow, conscientiously reining in his mental powers.
Librarian Ammer, it is an honour to meet you and to express to you my sympathies for the misunderstandings that have led us to where we now stand.
The librarian looked slowly down, as if his gaze were a precious implement with the power to drill unhindered through cloth, flesh and bone. It was diamond sharp, and despite the wards Decker had set about his mind in preparation for this encounter, he winced, and thought he saw Intep's thin lips twitch by way of a smile.
I will be watching you,
Warlock,
intently. I would advise you to attempt no repeat of your mind trickery here. Not on this ship. Not in the presence of the Primarch.
We are not so worldly as you men of the Imperium, rumbled Strakhan. The abilities of the consular caste are routinely employed in negotiations amongst our own. Abilities that we assumed you would have employed as well. It was not our intention to deceive. An efficient reunification of the 11 worlds of Garden Isle with the Imperium of Terror is all we ever desired.
Amar frowned distastefully at Decker.
And yet you bring another with you.
See the brand on his jaw?
The High Lord's pneumatics hissed as his torso pivoted, a clunkily articulated limb deployed to jab at Decker's face.
It is a mark of expiry. His value to the Garden Isle has been adjudged to have been exceeded by the burden his deterioration places on the state. His biological components and germline cells would already have been reprocessed for the next generation, had your blockade of Garden Isle Prime not stranded his ship.
Decker forced himself to bow. Amar and Santar watched him suspiciously. Arkaduana shrugged and threw Strakhan a reassuring smile. No one bothered to look at Ven.
Come then, Santar grunted. Ferus Manus is not known for his patience.
Santar allowed his gaze to veer neither left nor right, his jaw working so hard to keep his face locked forward that he had to gnaw through a growing cramp. Distorted reflections of armoured figures flowed along the glass-panelled walls apace, breaking into streaks of colour against murals and thick basalt braces, only to reform and weave after him anew. He grunted, eyes forward. The thump of his boots on the deck plates was reassuringly rhythmic and metallic. His cataphracty plate purred like a restive beast, in such corollary to his own Medusan spirit that it was uncanny. But his genhanced powers of perception fed him everything. The squeak of the old consul's shoes, the tripartite tattoo of his master's tread. He ground his teeth, eyes forward. He recognized the battle construct that he and Demeter had faced in the battle for the fission station. He wondered briefly if he could take the Garden Isle on, before concluding reluctantly that he could not. He swallowed his pride, eyes ahead. If it came to it, it would not be him alone. After leading the Garden Isle assembly through half a kilometre of the Fist of Iron's most breathtaking internal architecture, the procession arrived at a sweeping circular portal. Venerati, Urien, and Harrick Morn were there to meet them. Santar's honour guard spread out down the corridor. Morn tilted his head back.
High Lord Strakhan!
The cardinal's suit emitted a hiss by way of a nod.
You and your deputation may enter.
My aide will remain here,
said the grey-haired old consul Decker.
He is low caste. What we have to discuss with your Primarch is not for his ears.
Santar frowned over to the reticent mortal, who had not, he noted now, been involved in the opening round of introductions. Sensing his regard, the man turned, looking through him as though unable to focus his eyes. With a sick twisting of his guts, Santar was left with the feeling that he could see right through him, too, as though he were paper held up against a light. He gave a derisive snort, more aggressive than he had intended.
It's your embassy.
He threw a nod to Urien and Morn. Unable to reciprocate in full helms, the two Terminators simply moved aside, stomped about a half-circle until their backs were to him, and then grasped their side of an immense wheel mechanism in both hands. It was huge, too great for any mere space marine to operate alone. A growl burred through their helm augmitters, power servos whirring with the tremendous effort of forcing that wheel to turn. Once it began to move, however, the trick lay in stopping it. It spun out of the grip of the two Terminators, a blurred ring of silver, until the locking mechanisms clicked, and the weight of the portal itself edged it open. The air that escaped was cold as steel, dry as smoke. Urien and Morn stepped aside as Strakhan marched through the portal, forced into a stoop to contend with the lintel. Santar frowned at that, as if being greater in stature than the Primarch were a personal slight. The consul, Decker, thanked everyone, all smiles and soft words, tried to shake Santar's hand, then shook Arkaduana's, before grim-faced Ammar shepherded them all through. Urien and Morn heaved the door to after them. It shut with a heavy slam. Ferus Manus did not rise. He willed himself to recline in his iron throne, squeezing and releasing the moulded armrests in time as the emissaries of the Gardenal were escorted into his chambers. His gaze passed over the lesser mortal, frail and inconsequential, to the Lord of the Gardenal. He took in the detail of the shield coils and hazarded at their operation, the hyperdense energy-reflective metamaterial of his gross armature, assessed the output of his power cores, the effectiveness of his weapons, noted with deep ire at least a dozen that his legionaries had neglected to disable. His annoyance summoned a drilling pain in his head, and he released his death grip on one armrest in order to grind his knuckles into his brow. He glanced sideways. The great hammer Forgebreaker stood on the dais beside his throne. Its ebon haft was upright, inviting. Its head, moulded into the form of an eagle's wings, weighted it to the basalt flagstones. His palm itched. The living metal twisted and swam and keened softly like a nest of worms. The desire to break this thing that had so frustrated his chosen sons parted his fingers, his hand sliding up the armrest to within touching distance of his hammer's grip. The supplicants halted the prescribed distance from his throne. Dim illumination spilled from the trophy cabinets, washing their faces with thin grey light and the shadows of blades. They stared up at him, the size of him, the raw, intemperate might of him. And then, inevitably, they looked at his hands. Ammar left them to their horror, labouring up the high steps with wheezing breaths to stand by the Primarch's side, occupying the position opposite Forgebreaker, and then leaned in to whisper in his ear. The librarian had nothing of consequence to utter, but Ferus wanted the Gardenal to see him whisper, and so he watched as he listened to the Thousand Suns legionary tell him nothing, leaning towards his warhammer, as if its counsel might differ. But he did not rise. The only thing more profoundly superhuman than his temper was his will. And what would please his father and shame his brothers more than the belated surrender of the Gardenal?
"You returned my son, Turak, to my legion, and convinced Captain Arkaduana, whom I am beholden to trust, that I should take you on your word."
The words came slowly at first, like molten steel trickling into a cast, but then with greater urgency and alacrity as they continued to pour from him.
"For that reason alone I have admitted you here. Declare your surrender before me now, for I am Ferus Manus, Primarch of the 10th Legiones Astartes, the Iron Hands, and my decree is inviolate. Do this for me, and I will not obliterate every last trace of your civilization from your 11 worlds."
"To be a fly on that wall," Arkaduana mused.
"A what?" asked Santar.
"He means he's curious to know what they have to say to the Primarch," Morn chuckled.
Santar shot him a poisonous look.
"Presumably we surrender. There is little of their empire left to argue over."
Arkaduana glanced towards the black door, apparently doubtful, though his expressions were so mixed and changeable it was difficult to tell.
"What is it?"
"Nothing." The Terran was the single worst liar Santar had ever met.
"You know something of the Primarch's thinking, I don't."
Arkaduana's smile was strained.
"Only a confidence I cannot repeat."
Santar looked from him to Urien and Morn. They looked back, silently disapproving. The Third Legion captain had managed to become firmly liked by those that had served under him on Vesta and on Gardenal. He scowled at them both, then turned back to Arcaduana.
Go.
He waved off down the corridor.
The Primarch appointed you first captain and equerry for as long as the compliance of Gardenal required. Well, Gardenal is compliant. They've surrendered, so you can go and draw something.
Arcaduana held his gaze a moment, then bowed coldly, one gauntlet to the brilliant gold of the Palatine Aquila on his breastplate.
It appears you outrank me, first captain, so perhaps I will pass by the Apothecarian and look in on Ulan Cicerus, and the young hero Trurak too, perhaps. He was, for a brief spell at least, one of mine.
Go do that.
Centaur crossed his arms and turned his back, not even listening to the legionary's footsteps as he departed, eyes forward. The servile mortal then, however, watched him all the way. In a grinding hiss of pistons sliding through imperfectly lubricated metal jackets and a gurgle of fluid hydraulics, Strakhan approached the dais. Amar bristled, the blued steel of his sword sliding a finger's width from its scabbard, but Ferris stilled him with a raised hand. His heart pounded with the expectancy of his triumph. He gripped the arms of his throne fiercely as the Lord of the Gardenal reached the steps. There, level with the seated Primarch on the high dais, the construct stopped. The pale light from the lumen manifold fell across his visor grill and banded his mummified organic features with anemia and shadow. He was withered and blind, sockets in the sunken flesh where eyes had once been, copper wiring splotched with black spots of corpse rot erupting from his temples to slave into the control systems of his helm.
"What are you?" Ferris asked.
The Gardenal's voice emerged from several augmitters positioned across his skeletal scaffold body, several overlapping and imperfectly synchronized voices, all speaking at once.
"To permit individuals of the highest caste and most supreme achievement to perish with their flesh bodies would be wasteful. Transferring their consciousness to a machine matrix allows the best of us to rule forever."
The pattern of shadows shifted, the Lord's husk of a face creasing into a rictus.
"I have ruled among the High Lords for over 3,600 years.
Ferris felt an odd prickling of unease.
"Are you alive or dead?"
Strakhan's augmitters grizzled in amusement.
"To me, Primarch, that question is meaningless."
The Primarch's vision shimmered with a silver haze, the Gardenal hardening against the background until he shone as though he were clad in precious metal, brighter than the feeble lighting could have permitted alone. Swallowing his aversion to the Gardenal and the technology that made him live, he held out a hand, the metal writhing.
"Surrender to me."
The Gardenal looked back, his dead face inscrutable.
"No."
Anger hissed through Ferris's lips. It had been explained to him that men blinded by rage saw red. Ferris Manus was not a man, and when he looked upon the Gardenal, carrying his sovereign defiance all the way to the foot of his throne, he saw only silver. An argent flash spread through the haze as one of Strakhan's weapons systems discharged. It appeared to drag as Ferris focused on it, crawling from the emitter cell in the Gardenal's shoulder as if blunted by the Primarch's gaze. Time slowed to a stop. Fury cooled, hardened, cladding Ferris's heart and muscles in an aching chill. He saw the particle lash begin to accelerate. He threw out a hand and caught it. Incandescent sparks sprayed across the dais as the beam exploded in his grip. The liquid metal sizzled angrily, churning, diluting the reddened metal around his fist with fresh silver as the last sparks sputtered through his fingers. Amar, a Primarch's reflexes from receiving a particle lash to the face, blinked in hollow-eyed surprise.
"Leave us," Ferris hissed,
as Strakhan began deploying additional hidden weapon systems. Previously dormant systems were aggressively powering up, shields igniting, cloaking him in a violet aurora, claws, cutters, rotary saws and powered grabbers unfurling from his upper limbs and catching the light. His entire armoured harness swelled as gas-filled cells under arcs of electrical provocation shifted phase to become thick, shock-absorbent gels. He continued to grow, wreathed in electrical flame and bristling with blades, until he towered over Ferris Manus, even enthroned upon his dais.
"Tell Duquesne he has a task to complete."
He reached across, fingers boiling, rushing, closing over the grip of his hammer and hardening. And then he rose.
"That was a particle weapon," said Santar.
"They were supposed to be unarmed,"
Urien hissed. It was impossible to turn swiftly or move deftly in cataphracty pattern armour, but he and Morn were already grappling with the locking wheel. Santar shouldered in between them to hasten them along with his own strength. Someone tugged on the skirt of chainmail that hung from his folds, and he looked sharply down. Tobris Venn stared up at him with yawning great pupils and no emotion.
"I can't allow you to do that, sir."
Ignoring him, Santar growled down the corridor. The Terminator squad that had escorted them from the embarkation deck had remained on station, and were currently readying weapons and forming up ready to force the portal once it was opened. One of them clomped forwards, hand outstretched, to haul the mortal away.
"I'm sorry, sir, but High Lord Strakhan was most explicit."
The mortal made a muted gasping sound. At first, Santar thought that the Terminator had broken something. Mortals were painfully fragile. But then he saw that his brother was still reaching out for the collar of the man's uniform. The mortal staggered, as though pushed, remaining standing only by tightening his grip on Santar's armour skirt. Santar swore, letting go of the wheel lock, and reached back to deal with the nuisance himself. His gauntlet swallowed the mortal's arm from shoulder to forearm. The Gardenal dangled bonelessly from it as he hoisted him a meter off the ground.
"Do you know what—"
Before he could finish, the mortal vomited a chemical white froth down Santar's chest plastron. The First Captain looked over his inflexible gorget rings with a grimace. Flailing legs slapped his armour as the mortal began to seize, as though Santar's gauntlet were supplying an electric current. The veins began to rise from his skin, changing colour from purple-blue to a thick, foamy white. His eyes glazed over, head jerking back and forth, a foul stench gasping off his breath. Santar screwed up his face. It smelled like... The mortal's body began to balloon, skin stretching, splitting, bleeding explosive compound, forcing a shuddering smile for perhaps the first time in his existence.
"Most explicit!"
The explosion buckled the door down the middle, but didn't break it. It was diorite, patinaed only with the weaker materials of plasteel and obsidian. A neutron beamer could not breach Ferris's sanctum, not even if the battle tank it was mounted on followed through. The force, however, was enough to crack the frame in which the portal was mounted, cataracts of broken glass cascading to the flagstones as fissures pushed through the walls. It lifted Amar off the ground as he was crumpled, twisted and torn, skidding and rolling back into the chamber like a rag doll in poorly fitting armour. The lesser of the two Gardenal, the advisor Decker, looked at the librarian's unconscious form with surprise.
"Not exactly the assassination as planned, but as effective as any."
He turned to Ferris, and, feeling something brush his mind, Ferris looked sharply his way. The man backpedaled swiftly until his back was to the wall, his undead lord between himself and the furious Primarch.
"We know all about you,"
boomed Strakhan.
"We know you, and the High Lords believe you can be beaten. They believe I can beat you."
"I doubt it."
Ferris dragged his hammer from the top step as he started forward.
"My own father doesn't know me."